Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Two Florida Gulf Coast University professors have just returned from their 10-month leave on a Fulbright Scholar Grant. These grants are a program of the United States Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. And this Southwest Florida couple was able to use their grant to live and teach in Rwanda for nearly a year. Mark Simpson is an associate professor in the College of Education at FGCU and teaches courses in curriculum and instruction. He joins us now. Hi, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
And Sheila Balduck Simpson is also an instructor at FGCU alongside her husband. She teaches composition, business writing, and integrated studies in the College of Arts and Sciences, and she joins us as well in the studio. Sheila, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We're talking with two FGCU professors who have just returned from teaching in Rwanda for the last 10 months, and you can become part of this conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Mark, what is a Fulbright Scholar Grant?
A Fulbright Scholar Grant is money, financial aid, mm-hmm. to a person to travel overseas, live and work and teach or work in another country. It is for the international exchange of students and scholars. So not only do people of my stature of a university professor go abroad, but also students go abroad. And then students from other countries come to the United States. Students and scholars from other countries come to the States.
Is it the students that we refer to as a Fulbright scholar?
No.
Or even the professors?
The professors would be the scholar. Students would be exchange students on a Fulbright, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just wanted to get that straight. Mm-hmm. So how did you both manage to get a Fulbright?
We didn't.
Oh.
Yeah.
No?
Yes. All the stars aligned when Mark applied for a sabbatical leave at Florida Gulf Coast University, and I applied for what's called a professional development leave. And we both had to submit applications for the activity that we were going to do. So we both proposed and both got approved, and we set off on August 31st for Rwanda.
Yeah, but previous to that, one has to apply the year before one wants to go abroad on a Fulbright award. So this was a Fulbright Scholar Award. Now, about 30-something years ago, we went abroad again on a Fulbright English Teaching Assistant Award. Mm-hmm. So, and that's for young people who have just finished college, mm-hmm. and they want to go and assist an educator abroad with the English language instruction. And so we did that about 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and we went to Italy, and we were in the region of Emilia-Romagna, and I worked helping local middle school teachers with their English. And
where in Emilia-Romagna?
In Bologna.
Because I lived in Parma for a year.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So I was right down the road.
I went to Parma. I assisted an English language teacher who would teach local middle school teachers English language teaching techniques and theory. And so I would go to Parma once a week.
Well, I met a couple people that spoke English, and they might have learned.
Sure.
So how did the experience with Rwanda compare to spending the time in Italy? Obviously very different continents, different places.
Yes,
I mean, everything
yes.
different, but were there any yeah. similarities at all?
That's a good question. We were younger, much younger. It was the beginning of our professional careers. We were on our own. We received very little support from the State Department at that time. It was a new program. It was the beginning of the English Teaching Assistant Program, mm-hmm. for Fulbright for the State Department. We received some help, as I said, not much. Whereas the Fulbright Scholar Award we received some help. It wasn't a lot, but it was much more financial help than before. The similarity was that we were both involved in I was involved in teaching English language strategies to non-native speakers.
The big difference also was we had a six-month-old baby. Mm-hmm.
In Bologna?
In Bologna. Well, she was 6 months old when mm-hmm. we arrived. And so on $750 a month total, it was quite challenging to fix wonderful dinners with mortadella and count every single gettone. I was at home raising our baby, and I had other cultural experiences with the local community. Mark, on the other hand, would take a train and disappear for 9 hours at a time. Because he would have to go out to these middle school teachers, mm-hmm. and it
so
was challenging.
So this time in Rwanda, were you working together more?
Oh, yes. This was and we determined right from the start that we would work together, that we would co-teach our courses together. So we did everything together.
So what did you teach? And who did you teach?
Well, we were brought over to teach at the University of Rwanda, the College of Education in Kigali. Mm-hmm. And so the first semester we taught a course called English Teaching Methods. And it was to 57 former primary school teachers who were on a government scholarship to attend university. In Rwanda, one only needs a high school education to become a primary school teacher. At the end of the high school, the last year, there are teacher prep courses that a student would take. So that these were teachers, primary school teachers, who had anywhere from 2 to 25, 30 years teaching primary school. The teacher about 3 years ago, the country opened up its doors and said, hey, listen, we'll educate you primary school teachers. If you apply, we'll give you a BA degree. We'll put you through the university, the College of Education, and then you'll become secondary school teachers. So we had a class of students, primary school teachers, who were complete and they were in their second year. So they still had two more years to go to get their education, their BA. Now, the reason that Rwanda was teaching English and the reason that we were there, I received the Fulbright Scholar Award, was because in 2009, the country transitioned from a Francophone to an Anglophone education system. So mm-hmm. where beyond about the second or third grade, education was then going to be in English instead of French. And mm-hmm. then Kinyarwanda is the main language spoken by everybody in the country, so there would also be Kinyarwanda. So the country did that. And then entered the British Commonwealth, East African British Commonwealth, with Tanzania and Kenya and Uganda. And so it wanted to join that Commonwealth. And so we were brought over to help educate future teachers on how to teach English to their students, to their primary and secondary school students.
So, I mean, a lot of people in the United States remember Rwanda as the site of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi minority mm-hmm. that killed up to 1 million people, likely due to the success of the film Hotel Rwanda, which documented the hotel manager Paul Rusesabagina, or Bagina, I don't remember exactly. Is it a soft G or a hard G?
Bagina.
Bagina. We have memories of a horrible movie. That was reality there. Is that still something that's in the forefront of people's minds there? Are they trying to move past it and not think about it?
Oh, definitely trying to move past it. The president, Paul Kagame, was the leader of the forces that overtook the rebels, the Hutus, actually, the government that was in place at the time that started and advanced the genocide against the Tutsis. So Paul Kagame was the one that led that insurgency, and he's now the president. And for the last since the war, since the genocide, the policy of the government was one of unification. Let's bring this country together.
Really? Oh, yes. Because the fear is that would then shift the balance of power to the Hutu, mm-hmm. Since they're in a position of power, but that has not yet been abused?
Mm. In Rwanda, there is no, I am Tutsi, I am Hutu. You never, ever, ever ask anyone what tribe they come from. everyone identifies as I am a Rwandan. And every April, there is 1 month of peace and reconciliation where the population comes together to memorialize and work on an agenda for bringing unification to the country.
Yeah, there's a definitely a noticeable move towards we are Rwandans and not we are Tutsis and we are Hutus. Although any Tutsi and any Hutu could tell you who the Tutsi is and who the Hutu is. Yeah. But there is this feeling that we are working together, we're moving together forward into the future and trying to leave but not forget, but trying to leave the past behind us.
Well, the simple fact that it happened may be a galvanizing aspect to keep people focused on coming together and going forward peacefully, because there's no community that wants to see that happen to their community.
No, and no community wants to forget such a such an event. And there are memorials all over the country which remind people that this thing did take place. And as the newer generations, the younger generations advance, they're constantly reminded of this. As Sheila mentioned, the month of April, or at least 2 or 3 weeks in April, is that reconciliation month. Yeah.
But there's a powerful scene in Hotel Rwanda where the two women who look like they might be sisters are identified as being from opposing ethnic groups. And you also mentioned just now that people can tell who's a Hutu and who's a Tutsi. How can they tell
generally,
that?
Generally they can.
Is it kind of a looks-based thing?
Yes, it is. It is. And also then it's – yes, it is. And yes. They're generally, and we've read so much on this that there are many times when you cannot tell, you know, who is who. But you can
But it seems like it's becoming less and less important.
Well, let's hope it is.
Well,
is how we perceive it.
It used to be the hierarchy of identification in a lot of countries where it was family, tribe, then religion, and then country. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of usually the hierarchy that I always read about. But I'm happy to hear that news. So, Mark, while you were there, one of the videos that you captured was of some people playing music on what looks like handmade instruments in the shade under a tree next to a hand-painted tip box. We actually have some of that sound. So let's take a listen and hear what it sounds like.
Okay, sure.
It's hard not to be in a good mood listening to something like that. How did you come across that group of musicians?
Okay, we were vacationing in Uganda, which is the country to the north of Rwanda, and we were visiting four of the national parks there, the national safari parks or wildlife parks, and we were in the north in Murchison Falls National Park, and we were crossing. A river, one of the rivers leading out of Lake Victoria, and we were in the north of the park, and then coming back to cross the river to go to the south. This group called Hot Music in the Park was playing there for tips for money, and so we videotaped them and.
It's so fun to stumble upon things like that.
Yes, it was. It was great.
So, Sheila, during your presentation, you said that Rwanda is certainly a police state, but not one that you necessarily felt threatened in. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Yes, we kept saying it's a benevolent police state. There were literally police officers with rifles standing on every corner of a major Kigali street. And this provided a very, very secure and safe environment. I was training to run the Kigali Half Marathon, and I would go out running the streets of Kigali at 2:30 in the morning, and I felt extremely safe. Of course, conservative dress is very important. We have to respect the culture and cover up, no shorts, no cleavage,
yeah.
Nothing like that. But we felt very safe. However, there's a lot of censorship, and so we don't hear about stories of detentions, people being rounded up and taken to detention centers.
Did you hear about that from word of mouth?
No.
No?
No, no, no.
No, no. We've heard about it in what we've read, and then
from other countries,
other countries, and then what we've also seen, what we've viewed on YouTube videos and things like that. But no, we never heard of any of that. He's a benevolent dictator.
It's an interesting take on the freedom of the press, right? Mm-hmm. So you saw that firsthand of mm-hmm. what happens when the state takes over the press, and you didn't hear any of the bad news.
Oh, no.
Never.
No, never. But we've lived in other countries of the world where the situation's been similar, where the press is very limited in what it can do and what it can say. And so it was no surprise to us.
Yeah.
We did get our news through CNN. We had CNN on our laptop. We were able to access it and the American news stations.
So there's at least you can see stuff from outside. But news that was originating from the country was not going to talk about that.
No.
And you said that it's one of the cleanest cities that you've ever been to in Kigali. Do you think that's because of the police state situation, or do you think it's personal pride in wanting to take care of the country?
I think very much of it is personal pride. The last Saturday of every month is Umuganda Day, in which everyone in the community under the age of 65 and over the age of 18 will go out in the community and do a service, whether it's cleaning the streets, helping a neighbor build a house. And the streets are closed. There is no traffic on the roads from 8 o'clock in the morning till noon. And if you are on the roads and a benevolent police officer stops you, you will be fined for not doing your Umuganda service.
Umuganda service.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have another Fulbright scholarship in the future? Or are you planning on leaving the country again?
Who knows? But we plan on definitely leaving the country again. But I don't know if it's Fulbright. It might be Peace Corps response. We were originally in the Peace Corps when we finished college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so as former Peace Corps volunteers, we might go overseas again in a relatively new – it's been around some years now, but it's called Peace Corps response. It's a shorter term of service for
– Like a few months or something?
A few months to a year, 6 months to a year, usually, or a year and maybe a month or two to work overseas for a specific job, right?
Do you have any idea where you want to go? The world is your oyster.
Oh, yeah. The world is – it's open.
It's wide open. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we look forward to hearing where your next adventure takes you. Sheila and Mark, thanks so much for coming
and
talking to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Our show today was produced by Mike and Irie and Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1. WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.
Yeah.